mouth, and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Wake up! Four times. In 14 verses, Jesus tells the disciples to wake up, to be alert, to keep watch, to stay awake, which tells me two things. One, something important must be happening or about to happen. And two, the disciples must be very sleepy. Very tempted, at least, to let down their guard. From the beginning of this passage, we're roped in, hooked with the promise that something big is on the horizon. But in those days, after that suffering, there will be fantastic sales at Walmart. Many lights of all different colors scattered along rooftops and in trees and shrubbery, gifts wrapped in paper and stowed under a plastic tree, pants with elastic waistbands to account for all the delicious food everyone will be eating. Tammy, why are you looking at me like that? Is that not what you read? Let me see. Hold on, I have the verse in front of me. Yeah, it says, but in those days, after that suffering, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. That doesn't sound much like Christmas. With the shepherds and the angels and the manger and the candy canes, this doesn't sound like the kind of thing we want to hear right now or ever. Which is maybe exactly why we have to hear it, to be reminded of it, why Jesus has to tell us to wake up, lest we fall asleep to visions of sugar plums. Jesus' insistence on wakefulness perhaps becomes clearer as we journey on through the Gospel of Mark. He knows that a lot is happening in not a lot of time. Things that shouldn't be missed, things that are important, messages that we ought to understand, and if we miss them, we miss the broader message that God is trying to tell us. Now, don't get me wrong, both paths have their consequences. There are consequences to staying vigilant, and there are consequences to falling asleep. The connotation of the language here is clear, especially if you can speak Greek. Jesus isn't just telling us not to be in a dazed stupor all day. Jesus is asking us to lose sleep for this, to keep awake even in times and circumstances when we would otherwise normally be sleeping. So we have to choose our path. We have to choose our discomfort. We either get the discomfort of weariness, destruction of the temple. Just before our passage for today picked up, Jesus is asked when the temple will be destroyed. And this passage is his answer. And I know many of you feel like your temple has been destroyed this year. Even though the brick and mortar building still stands, and even though we'll be back together as soon as we can, still 8 months and counting is a long time. It is a long time to be doing things remotely and virtually and differently. The virus, a little thing too small to see, demolished our old ways of doing things in an instant. And in that demolition, other things were lost besides our ability to gather. Things like comfort and normalcy and a sense of security. And in the midst of all of that, what can we do but watch and wait and see what God will be doing next? Just like that was all they could do then. The truth is, we don't know the timing of when things will be put right. We don't know the timing of the culmination of all things. We don't know the end of the wrong and the beginning of the right. We don't know when that's going to happen. But there are two things we do know from the passage we read today. We know that though the arrival of this time may be as unpredictable as the arrival of a master returning home after a long journey, that it will come. It will come just as surely as spring turns into summer when the fig tree starts to blossom. Jesus has been faithful enough to us for us to keep watch another hour, just to keep an eye on that old fig tree for a little while longer. Because he promised that everything would be put right one day. And when he makes a promise, he means it. This season of Advent that we're entering into, in this season we're waiting and watching and working towards something far bigger than just the nativity story. When is birth ever the end of the story? Jesus' birth isn't what we're waiting for. As if all we're doing here is play acting or historical reenactment, pretending to anticipate something that already happened thousands of years ago. That's not what we're doing here. The deeper truth is that Jesus' birth wasn't even all they were waiting for way back then. What they were waiting for is what we are still waiting for. A story that began, not ended, with the birth of Jesus. During Advent, we relive together the prologue, knowing that the last chapter has yet to play out. Knowing that we're not some after-credits scene, we're not some addendum to the pages of history. We are part of the story. We're part of what God is trying to tell the whole world right now. We're part of the transformation of wrong into right and death into life. It is so easy to fall asleep when you think all the important stuff is already over. But Mark